You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to NSPS Radio Hour. Welcome, Bob, Don. Always great to have you on the show.
Good morning, Kurt. Good morning, everyone.
I was beginning to think that because of our topic today, and we're actually going to be delving into some issues, maybe we should change the name of the show today to Let's Talk Surveying. and I bring that up because oftentimes we have guests on the show, and we're always related to our profession, obviously, in some way, but we're actually going to talk surveying today. Sort of an intriguing situation, and one that has sort of taken some new roots, if you will, just recently. You had shared some new information with me, not only on the primary one we're going to talk about today, but on a couple of other things that have been going on recently, and there was a pretty big email trail last weekend about the one in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a timely event for us to talk about because obviously things are still ongoing on the innocent survey mistake, as it was referred to. So for the audience, let me just explain. I'm sure everybody will recognize Bob Don's name. Bob is from Connecticut. He is a past president of NSPS. We really are glad to have you on the show again today. Bob, it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
It's a pleasure to talk with you, Kurt. And this story is a very compelling story, I think. I think all of us who have practiced surveying for any amount of time are intrigued with anything that has to do with a boundary dispute or a problem with a survey or whatever, and this one just is kind of over the top in that category. So,
yeah, that's true. And for the audience's sake, we're talking about the one that was up in Rhode Island that came to the forefront. How long ago? A month or two ago, Bob?
At least I'm starting to lose track of time on this one. It seems like it's been part of my existence for quite a while. But.
Right.
At least several months ago, yes.
I think it would be interesting for the audience to know how and why you decided to really check into this thing as a surveyor.
Well, it first came onto my radar. I was sitting at home with my wife in the morning getting ready to make the trek into the office, and on one of the morning national news shows, I forget which one it was that we were watching. I think it was the CBS with Charlie Rose and they brought up the story of this house that was $1.9 million house that was built on the wrong property in Rhode Island and said apparently due to a surveying mistake. And so I decided, okay, I'll get in the office and I'll see what I can find out about this. And before I even made it to the office, I get a phone call from my sister who immediately says to me, well, I see one of your colleagues in Rhode Island is in big trouble. And I went, oh, so you're watching the news this morning, and continued on in, and only to discover that this was not the first time that this story had hit the news, and that you could find newspaper articles about it, not just regionally, but all across the country. I read articles from, you know, California and you name it, anywhere in the country, you were able to find a newspaper article about it, and they all consistently used this, a snippet of testimony that came out of the subsequent court cases on this particular case. The developer referred to it as an innocent surveying mistake that caused the problem, so everybody seemed to latch on to that and include it in their news stories.
Yeah, I really hadn't been able to focus as well on what actually took place, and still, I'll know more after we have our conversation today, but just recently you sent me a copy of a drawing that I guess was, I don't know if that was part of the evidence or if it was something that happened after the fact, basically showing the actual lines and then the lines that were marked on the ground that resulted in the mistake. But I guess I'm just having a difficult time figuring out exactly what they did to get it in the wrong spot. And maybe we don't need to get into that just yet, but that's the first thing that hit me when I first saw the drawing that you sent.
It's a 27-year story, and the I choose to, in my portrayal of the story, to refer to these as innocent mistakes, not innocent surveying mistakes. But the initial innocent mistake was made in 1984 when a gentleman named Lamoureux bought the property that the house was supposed to be built on, and had a subdivision prepared by a company called ERA Engineering. In Rhode Island, there is a I'm pretty sure unique to Rhode Island, the ability for engineers to stamp various levels of surveys. And so the original subdivision was done by this firm, ERA Engineering, in 1984, and cut the property into two lots. The most westerly of the two lots was the one that would subsequently be the one that the house was supposed to be built on. And that plan was never signed by a surveyor. It only carried the stamp of the engineer, signature and stamp of the engineer. And subsequently, it would come to light that there was what I believe was described as a approximate 60-foot error in the closure for that lot, which is pretty much the root of how this occurred.
So that there was a 60-foot error in the actual description?
Yeah, when you went to close the lot, there was somewhere in the order of a 60-foot error in the closure of the lot. Which I would like to think, I can't speak for everybody. I would like to think that if a surveyor had, done his analysis of that lot, that would have been discovered right then and there, and it would have been end of story. Let's solve this before we build anything. But
right,
unfortunately, that wasn't the path that this followed down.
Now, going back, you said back in 84, so when that happened, what occurred at that time, I guess I should say, was the creation of these two lots, had they formerly just been part of a bigger tract, or was it an overall subdivision? Or
if you were to chase it back, I think you would discover that they came out of a bigger parcel, but Lamoureux in 84 essentially just took a piece of land and subdivided it into two building lots.
Okay.
And the important thing here is that the other side of the line, the side of the line that the house ultimately ended up being built on, is not one of the two lots. That's yet a separate piece of property. And that property is currently known as the Rose Nolman Park. And that property was purchased in 1993 by a gentleman named Saul Nolman, who I believe was a doctor in New York City and had acquired a substantial fortune. And one of the things that he did in honor of his mother was to, in 2007, he had this property turned into the Rose Nolman Park, set up a foundation to put it into a declaration of trust. And in part of the declaration of trust was that there was a $1.5 million penalty if the property were ever used for any other purpose than for recreation and contemplation, free of charge to the public.
And that manage the foundation?
Yes. The foundation itself would pay, I believe, to the hospital that Saul Nullman had worked at,
a
penalty of $1.5 million.
So that what you just said answered my next question, which there's nothing on that property other than the house being there that's not supposed to be, but nothing else was ever built on that parcel.
There is a parking area, and there may be a cabana style place where you can picnic or whatever, but it's a park. And it fronts, all of these properties front right on the Atlantic Ocean, so it's oceanfront property. So
I think one of the things that intrigued me in looking at the plat or the drawing you sent me, and it's not, I don't see it covered anywhere in any of the articles, but it appears to me that where the house ended up being built across the actual property line is a more suitable location to build a house than anywhere on the property itself, because it looks like the terrain gets steeper.
I didn't, in my initial review of this, I didn't really look at that. I didn't pay close attention to that because I was more interested in the scenario of how the house got placed on the wrong lot. And once that I was reasonably certain that there was no surveyor that was involved in doing that, how non-surveyors were able to position this house without the benefit of a survey. But interestingly enough, and I believe I sent the item to you this morning, that the latest thing that's occurred with this was when the courts finally ruled, the ruling was that the house either had to be demolished or moved. After a rather lengthy permitting process, Mr. Lamoureux was able to get Coastal Resource approval to move the house, and he had to get Coastal Resource approval because of the very point that you've raised, that the actual building lot that he owned was a much more difficult site to develop, and it required this additional permitting. And in the course of doing that, then that permit approval was actually brought to court, and the court has just ruled that the permitting is valid and that he will be able to move the house. But
right.
This is, the third go-round for court. I mean, it went to the original problem went to the Superior Court of Rhode Island and then was upheld.
We're right up on our first break, so let's get into that when we get back from the break.
Great.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com, and thank you.
This is Denise Simon. 18 hours a day, I live in a world as an intelligence analyst. What I find is reprehensible, what I find is terrifying, what I find is treasonous. The mainstream media has completely failed the American people. So join me for the Denise Simon Experience every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Quick steaks are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden steaks, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about Quick Steaks, go to www.quicksteak.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
And here's something new from Schonstedt. Did you know that Schonstedt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to Schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
This is Donna Fiducia, co-host of Cowboy Logic Radio, and you're listening to America's Web Radio, a most eclectic mix of conservative shows.
We're back for our second segment with Bob Don today, talking about the innocent survey mistake. And we talked a little bit at the break about our, how shall we, I don't know what term to use for our suspicions on motivations, but we'll let those not be part of this discussion because we don't have any clues in terms of how we got to where we got. So
it's amazing how often when you and I talk, we come to the conclusion we don't have a clue.
That's very true. Very true. But at least we're kindred spirits, so that's worth something, right? So I guess it would be interesting for the audience to hear about your research efforts on this. I mean, obviously you went to some extent to try to get to the bottom of what you've pulled together.
Well, one of the first things that I did was track down the opinions from both the Superior Court and then subsequently the Supreme Court in Rhode Island, because I was intrigued at where this snippet of testimony came from, this you know, innocent survey mistake came from. And in the initial transcripts that I saw, which for the Superior Court case, Mr. Lamoureux, the developer, said in the court case that he didn't believe that he should be punished because of an innocent surveying mistake. And so at that point, that's when I decided, okay, well, I got to find out, was there actually an innocent surveying mistake? And if there was, what was it? Which led us to what I call the next innocent mistake, which occurred in 2009. Mr. Lamoureux has now owned this property for 25 years, I guess it was in 2009. And at that point, he conveyed the property to a corporation called 420 Corporation, and he's the sole owner and principal officer of 420. So he basically just shifted it into a corporate entity as opposed to owning the property on his own. And went about getting permits to build on the property. And he based that permit application on and I'm putting this in quotes, in a survey that was prepared by a registered professional engineer from Kerrigan Engineering, also a Rhode Island firm. And this survey as well contained only the stamp and signature of the engineer. There was no surveying stamp or signature on this plan. In Rhode Island, they're allowed to prepare what is called a Class 3 standard survey, which is, in Connecticut anyway, is we call it a data accumulation survey, and it's a glorified compilation plan with a boundary that's based on somebody else's information. Unless the surveyor has done his own analytics and his own field survey and has upgraded that based on his own survey work, which was not the case here. The notation was that it was based on the original subdivision map. So in 2009, they just perpetuated the initial problem, except they added a very valuable improvement to the scenario at the same time, and again without the benefit of a survey.
Do you know if in today's world people depend a lot on tax maps and county GIS maps and all that kind of thing? Do you know whether or not this was depicted on some map like that could have contributed to the confusion?
It's my understanding that it really was relying upon the original subdivision plan and then preparing a development plan, a site plan, that that didn't pursue boundary issues at all, that just took a portrayal of the property from an existing subdivision map and ran with it, and which, when done, as was ultimately discovered, led to a mislocated boundary line on the development plan. Site improvements were completed, they entered into a purchase agreement with a buyer, and the buyer was the first person with the wisdom to say, "Okay, I'm about to make a $2 million investment in something. I want to know for certain what it is I'm getting." And he actually hired a surveyor. So it was, and this was in 2011. So 27 years after Mr. Lamoureux bought the property, a surveyor finally sets foot on his property, and it was a gentleman named Richard Lipsitz from Waterman Engineering Company, and he prepared an as-built survey and got to his office in the afternoon of the day that his field crew had been out there locating the improvements. And heard the thing that most of us that have done this kind of work have heard, on rare occasions anyway, is, "Boss, you better come in here and take a look at this."
Yeah, we all love hearing those words, don't we?
Well, it's a little less daunting when it's not you're not the reason why you better take a look at it. But, you know, he took a look at it and immediately said to his people that we got to verify that we're right, that what we figured out is right, and they double checked their locations and came up with the same information, and his next step was he contacted the people at Kerrigan that did the site plan and asked, can we sit down and take a look at this, and the distilled version of how that conversation went was that they looked at it and went, "Oh my God, you're right," and that essentially was the end of any discourse of whether there wasn't a battle of this is my survey and I'm right and this is my survey and I'm right. There was none of that. This was yes, okay, we were wrong. And as I say, the defense in court was that it was an innocent surveying mistake, which, again, with my involvement with my profession, the first thing that I wanted to do was try to, shift the media focus on this so that at least this was being portrayed correctly, that it began to be referred to as either an engineering or development mistake, or just as I've chose to do in the things that I've written about it, just call it an innocent mistake and not be pointing a finger necessarily at anyone about who's responsible for this, but to make it clear that although technically in Rhode Island, because there is this allowance for engineers to do certain forms of surveying, it could be called a surveying mistake. At the worst, it was a surveying mistake that was made by a non-surveyor. So, I think it's very important that that particular twist to the story be corrected.
That within itself is evidence that how important it is to hire an actual surveyor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The purchaser, although not happy when he found out what the results were, because they were, my understanding is they were looking forward to spending time in their beautiful home on the Atlantic Ocean, but the buyer described it as the best $5,000 I ever spent on nothing at all. And it really does emphasize entirely the value of investing in authoritative survey.
So to just follow this through to its situation as we're standing at the moment in this discussion, the actual survey that discovered the error was commissioned by the purchaser?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep, that's correct.
So it was really more of a being done for closing purposes, so to speak?
I'm sure that was part of it. I'm not privy to that, mm-hmm. but it certainly would be. It would stand to reason that any lender that was putting out that amount of money said, well, no, we got to have a survey. But I also got the impression that the buyer was also interested in crossing T's and dotting I's, because again, he was making a substantial investment in something.
Yeah, well, that makes perfect sense on both counts.
Well, with the ability to look back on things, it makes complete sense. I know that I quite often have people say, well, what can we do to save some money in this process? So, and I'm sure other surveyors out there listening hear the same thing as, is there some way we can save some money? And I mean, this is also from a practitioner's standpoint, this is a pretty gaudy example of what can go awry when you do look for ways to cut corners, when you say, well, yeah, we could do a data accumulation survey, and that'll save you some money. And in the end, did it save them any money? So
the real answer is, what can we do to save money is get an actual survey ahead of time.
Yes, absolutely. But again, it's easy to say with hindsight, and you don't know what the conversation would be without that hindsight information. I mean, as I said, they just went through the court-ordered process of getting the permitting to move the house back over onto the lot that it's supposed to be on. And that the approval of that permitting was subsequently brought to court. And in the newspaper article that appeared about the permitting being upheld in court, they used the moniker again of an innocent surveying mistake.
Yeah, I saw that.
The permitting was done to rectify an innocent surveying mistake. So,
and here we are in our second break.
We haven't really gotten off of step one in terms of...
Right. Well, we're at our second break, Bob, so let's go to that. We'll come right back.
Great.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details. Or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's schonstedt.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at Schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
This is Donna Fiducia, former anchor at the Fox News Channel, and now co-host of Cowboy Logic Radio. And you're listening to America's Web Radio.
We're back with Bob Don talking about the so-called innocent survey mistake. And this is the time of the show, Bob, where our sponsor, Parker Davis Quickstakes, has a contest, and I ask you a question, you give me an answer, and the first person to repeat that answer to quickstakescontest@americaswebradio.com would be the winner for the day.
Somebody gets the prize for repeating something I say?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Wow, that's...
So it's going to be an answer they'll have to listen to closely. Tell us again, what is the name of that document or activity that someone other than a surveyor can do in this type of instance in Rhode Island?
It's called the Class 3 Survey and is defined as a data accumulation survey.
Data accumulation survey. That's the answer we're looking for today. Thanks for participating in that. Again, I'm still a little perplexed, and I don't know how much information there is available as to the how of the initial, and I don't want to use the word survey, but the initial depiction, perhaps, of where this property line was established for the purpose of building this house. I'm still a little lost on how that occurred. I mean, I know the process that was followed. I'm just unsure of and you may not even know this, the logic of how that occurred.
The logic of how it occurred, I don't know. In the actual mathematics of it, I'm only tangentially familiar with. I did talk to Mr. Lipsitz. Had a great conversation with him about his uncovering of the error, and my understanding of it was that initial subdivision plan in 1984, in its depicted format, showed the line approximately 60 feet to the west of where it should be, and which when you took the mathematics on the plan, the mathematics on the plan didn't support that location. So that when the subsequent reliance on the existing depiction in 2009, when the site plan was developed reliant on this plan, it showed a line that was 60 feet too far to the west, which then allowed for the siting of the house, the septic system, and the majority of the driveway in a location that wasn't on the lot.
Right.
And they managed to put almost everything that they built and developed on the wrong side of the poorly depicted line.
Now, was that improperly depicted line on some sort of, I mean, I know it was on this product you just talked about a while ago, but it never showed up on any survey drawing anywhere, apparently.
Well, it showed up on what was called a data accumulation survey.
Okay, that's an official survey. It's not just a...
In the state of Rhode Island, apparently, that's correct.
Okay.
It is considered a survey, but it's a survey prepared... In this case, it was a survey prepared by an engineer. I mean, any number of the good surveyors that we know in Rhode Island are also able to produce data accumulation surveys should they choose. I believe that Mr. Lipsis, who discovered the error, is also a member of the Surveying Licensing Board in Rhode Island. And it's my understanding from talking with him that the licensing boards have sent out declaratory rulings, if not prohibiting, at least discouraging the use of data accumulation surveys in the permitting process. It's the board's opinion that a plan prepared for permitting purposes should be reliant on a more authoritative survey. Authoritative is the term that they seem to use in Rhode Island to describe a more accurate survey.
Interesting terminology, considering that word shows up in model laws and other documents with regard to what is considered surveying. That's kind of interesting they'd use that same terminology.
Well, it could be that the people in Rhode Island that I'm speaking with, because of their, I won't call it longstanding, but their battle of several years over the issue of engineering surveys as it pertains to how it's described in the model law, it may just be a matter of the Rhode Island surveyors have adopted using that term authoritative survey. Because they've spent a number of years battling about the issue of engineering surveys.
If one is going to perform, and I keep forgetting the full name of that data accumulation survey, what you called it. If that's something that's allowed, is there a criteria, like if you or I perform a survey, there has to be a closure and mathematics to support that? Is that not necessarily for a data accumulation survey?
In this circumstance, there was not, because it was this class 3 version of it, which apparently what's required on that is a note that says that the boundaries depicted hereon were taken from such and such a plan, which was relied on. And you have the option, and which apparently is the board's preferred option, to prepare a data accumulation plan where you rely on a survey, but you perform your own analytics on it, which I think they call either a class 1 or a class 2. So there is there is some variance to how you can approach this, but in this case, this one was done with the note that says, you know, the boundary was depicted on the previous plan, and does not include analysis or computations on our part.
Very interesting. In reading that latest holding by the judge in terms of the house being moved.
Yeah.
There was a sentence in there which said the buyer backed out of the deal back in 2011. Is that the same buyer?
Yes.
So are they out of the deal now?
I believe they walked away from the deal.
Okay. I don't know why, but I guess as I was reading some of the earlier stuff, I've kind of surmised that they may be still in it. And then when you said earlier they were looking forward to start enjoying their house, I thought, well, maybe they were hanging in there. But then I read that sentence.
I don't believe so. And in the initial two court cases were not between the potential buyer and the developer. They were between it was a trespass suit brought by the Rose Nolman Park Foundation against the developer 420 Corporation. So
right,
and
that would have
made sense. The buyer was not party to the actual court case on this.
Right, 420 was the owner of the property.
Or
the owner of the structures, I should say. I guess, and maybe not the property they were sitting on, but the adjoining property they were.
Yes,
the owner.
Okay. He's the owner of the lot next door, and
the house that's not on the property.
And the guy that paid for the house that's on the other property.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, and in this case, I guess this is an interesting little twist. Because of the stipulations laid out for the park, that made maybe a simpler solution of just allowing it to stay and trading some property back and forth, a basic impossibility.
Well, that's after Lipsitz met with Kerrigan and reviewed the findings. Kerrigan obviously reported to his client, and Mr. Lamoureux went to the Park Foundation and said, look, this innocent survey mistake has occurred. Can we do something to remedy this? Can I either buy a portion of this property or trade the portion of your property that the house has mistakenly been built on for an equal or larger piece of my property? And the foundation had to say, well, gee, no, we can't. If we do that, we'll be subject to the $1.5 million penalty that we have to pay. So,
because they would have been allowing something that
exactly.
They swore not to allow.
Yeah, the wording in the trust was very specific. I mean, it left the foundation with no wiggle room.
And I can see from looking at the drawing you provided, I'm not sure what they would have traded for anyway that wouldn't have been impacted by a house sitting in the middle of it.
I'm not certain of this, but I got the impression from our colleague Ed O'Brien that what he was going to trade them was a piece, I believe, that's right across the street from the park.
Oh, I see. Not part of the parcel where the house was supposed to be.
Yeah, it wasn't going to be a contiguous piece to the existing park, but
I see.
But that conversation didn't go any further than is there something we can do? And the answer was no. And then the foundation brought suit to have them removed from the property. Brought a trespass suit.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, all of this raises a lot of really interesting questions with regard to, you know, what do we do as a profession to help alleviate these kind of things? What conversations need to be had about who can do what under what circumstances, and what criteria does one need to follow? And then some of the most recent stuff you sent to me, it appears this is happening in more and more places. We just saw the one from Florida this week, I guess it was.
Yeah.
You could touch on that a little bit, perhaps, and then the very intriguing one up in Minnesota where the candidate sawed his garage in half. I thought that was kind of intriguing.
Did
as
the
well.
Picture come through on the Minnesota one?
It did. It looked like a tornado hit half of it.
No, it's when you see the picture of it, it's quite impactful.
Yeah, it certainly is, no question about that. So maybe we can touch on those. But I think the bit broader issues are something we'll want to talk about when we come back because, you know, here we are, the National Association of Society of Professional Surveyors and our state affiliates, and we certainly don't want our profession getting a bad name. So we're right up on the break. So let's go to that. Maybe we'll come back and talk about that.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that Pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Schonstedt, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com, and thank you.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
This is Donna Fiducia, co-host of Cowboy Logic Radio, and you're listening to America's Web Radio.
We're back with our last segment with Bob Don today, and we've been talking about the, quote, innocent surveying mistake in Rhode Island. And we mentioned before going to break, Bob, the two other things that have come up more recently. And in our last segment here, maybe it is a good thing to talk about. What can we do? You mentioned a number of paths that should follow as individuals, as a profession, and through our associations.
Well, I do think that the the lessons that can be learned from this and the things that we can do are as we were during the break discussing, are there's several layers to it. There's the layer of what can we do as practitioners, what as a professional, what do you take from this? And you know, I mean, the first thing that started, you know, going off in my mind was that it's real important to be vigilant with your clients and to you know, always caveat when they're looking to do when they're looking to save some money or to cut a corner or whatever, that you always make sure that you outline that, you know, here's the pitfalls, here's what can happen, and do you really want to run that risk for what's not going to really, in the end, be a significant saving anyway. You know, so I think that the lesson we learned there is that, you know, here is a very very expensive lesson that fortunately for most of us out here anyway, we didn't have to go through the painful part of it being our mistake to learn this lesson. As a profession, I think it's real important that, number one, that we try to turn the tide of how this is portrayed and somehow make it very clear that this is, as I said earlier, if it is a surveying mistake, it's not a surveying mistake made by a surveyor, that this was not a surveyor's error, regardless of whether you want to call it a surveying mistake or not. It was not a surveyor's error, that this error was made either by the engineer or by the developer, one or the other. And then as members of a professional community, do we want to take a hard look at our position and what we may or may not want to do about allowances and guidelines or regulations or statutes that, if not encourage, at least allow for the performance of certain levels of surveying by members of allied professions. And I mean, I know we've had that discussion at the NSPS level in the last 4 or 5 years.
Right, and still going on pretty strongly as we speak with regard to what are typically known as engineering surveys, which are different from this one in most ways, but have some similar characteristics, I guess, in terms of what one's allowed to do
right
in the framework of within the overall realm of what I'm trying to accomplish, I can do this. And
exactly.
Actually, that's a big issue in Rhode Island. You were talking about Ed earlier. You know, it's,
yes.
Rhode Island's not alone in that. There are a lot of people and that are out there that are talking about that. And, of course, as we know, that a lot of that discussion that's going on now comes about because of the whole change in the educational structures,
mm-hmm,
and experience structures with regard to the differences between surveying and engineering.
Well, and one of the things that I try to point out about this particular nuance to this case and to the discussion of engineering surveys in general is that right now, if anything, the knowledge and the expertise that's required to perform surveying is much more it's much more involved than it was at the time that all of these clauses were put into model laws or regulations or whatever. You know, there may have been a time when you came out of an engineering program with a sufficient enough knowledge of some basic surveying that, yes, you could go out and do a topo around a place where you were going to put an addition on a building or something. But certainly where surveying has evolved to at this point, that's less and less the case. I mean, if anything, it requires a significantly greater breadth of knowledge and this at a time when at least it's my understanding anyway, that engineering curriculums have less and less focus on surveying issues than they had in the past anyway. So, you know, the current engineering education does not prepare you for surveying practice that is now actually more requires greater expertise than it did in the past.
Right. And, you know, that side of the argument actually comes back around to the surveyor side of things with regard to our own requirements for licensure from an educational
Absolutely.
Experience basis, because we're making an argument in one case that isn't necessarily supported by our position in another case.
Yes. It is a time when there's more need for surveying education than there ever was.
Understanding, of course, that education in and of itself is still not the total answer.
Absolutely.
Some people tend to think that's true, and it's not. You still have to have a lot of experience and experiences to perform well as a professional surveyor. But clearly that argument that, well, you weren't educated to do this doesn't resonate as well if we're not saying the same thing to other folks.
Mm-hmm.
So, but and then you see these things, and I haven't really looked into this one in Florida very much yet, but it seems as though just in my first reading of it, perhaps some of the activity that took place down there is not flattering for us surveyors anyway.
That's my first blush assessment of this one. The most detailed account of the Florida house that I could find states that the original subdivision layout and planning was done by, I'm going to call it Survey Firm 1, because I'm not familiar enough with this particular case yet to know who the parties are yet. But Survey 1, Firm 1 went in, did all the initial subdivision maps, did the layout work, and had gotten to a point where I think the lot numbers in question were lot 11 and lot 12, and they were asked to mark out lot 12 so that a house could be put on lot 12, and they marked out lot 11 instead of lot 12. And then there was some kind of falling out or a termination of the relationship between the developer and the firm number one. And firm number two came onto the scene and just relied upon the mark out that was already there and staked out the house. So, but in this case, you know, we can't point the finger at a third party here and say, you know, well, this was an engineering mistake. In this case, it's looking like, yes, it was actually a surveying mistake.
Right. And taking into account that in looking at the information there and how this thing was put together, it wasn't as simple as walking out and finding some irons, apparently. I mean,
right.
It was like this was a lot of stuff on paper that then had to be thrown on the ground somehow.
Yep.
So, all of that, I think, leads to what you were talking about there a few moments ago in terms of our diligence, whether as individual practitioners, as a profession, as associations, our whole collective being, if you will. There's a lot of diligence on our part to make sure that we have supportable and reasonable approaches and arguments to make when we're addressing these kind of things.
Absolutely. And I think that we all should embrace this at all three levels, as practitioners, as members of the community, and then as members of the professional society as well. I think we all should be prepared to be advocates on these various things at all three levels. Yeah, I think earlier we, not on, on the show today, but I think a couple of weeks ago, we had had a conversation about, you know, how do we change this this perception in the public forum, and that's a much more difficult thing. I mean, today we're sort of preaching to the choir, so it's, you know, it's a little easier to get the message out and have the message resonate. But you know, are there other forums where we can present this story and correct the misconceptions that are inherent in the story, so that say like realtors then understand, oh well, geez, now I get why it's important to have a survey done, or planning agencies start to understand, well, you know, yes, we could allow data accumulation surveys, but we really should be asking for authoritative surveys.
Right.
And,
yeah,
and
I guess
how do we get in front of those forums to present this?
Yeah, and I guess, as you were saying, speaking to the choir, maybe our biggest mission here is to encourage people to prepare themselves to make those reasoned and articulate arguments in those different fora and go do it.
Yeah,
because
absolutely. If you're in the Chamber of Commerce, offer to, you know, to do a presentation at your Chamber of Commerce dinner about this story. You know,
absolutely.
I'm sure they'll find it interesting.
Yeah, without
a
doubt.
Nothing like $2 million to perk up someone's ears on something.
We're in our last minute of the show, so before I let it get away from me, I want to thank you again for being with me again today. It's always great to converse with you at any time, but certainly on the show, and looking forward to seeing you in a few days when we all gather out and in the proximity of where the World Series will be, although we probably won't get to see it.
Well, like I say, I can go tangential easy, but I did look at what it would cost to buy tickets, and I think we're watching the games at the hotel bar.
Yeah, no doubt. My first look, they were $400 to $600. So.
Yeah, they've gone up, Kurt.
And that's not going to get any better, right?
They've gone up. I appreciate the opportunity to be on with you. I really enjoyed talking with you as well. And,
great.
And thanks for the opportunity to talk about this particular case, too.
I appreciate it. And I will see you in a few days.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.